the show.
Hello and welcome to The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, here in the studio with the team, Ashley, Steve, and Mott. Hi, guys.
Hey, Lisa.
Yesterday was very rainy here in Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to be honest. Remember when we talked about our cars? I got hit by more hail yesterday.
Oh, no.
More hail.
Did your car leak?
It did not leak this time.
Yeah, that's good.
So that's good. I did not notice if something else flew off my car, which I wouldn't be surprised. I'll maybe find that out in a couple weeks. But it's just how I roll. So, well, we are excited to be with you here today. Stay tuned later in the show for Candace showing up via phone to answer a listener question about email relationships. This is someone who's overseas and just is an emailing fiend with someone. So we're going to give her the scoop on that. And then our culture segment, actually, this week, we're going to be visited by former President George W. Bush.
That's what we do on this show.
These are the kinds of people we get.
The best guests.
Yeah, big time.
We do, yeah. So we're going to get the scoop from him just on how life has been going since the White House and just maybe some encouragements for Boundless readers, especially since I'm pretty sure he's a fan.
He's a good guy.
Yeah. He's cool. So that's going
to
be awesome.
In Crawford, he can't get any radio stations, so he listens to the Boundless show.
Uh-huh. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. We want him to keep doing that. So in keeping with kind of that high level, you know, type of talk and topic, we want to talk a little bit about TV today. like, I'm super spiritual, so I hardly ever watch TV. But I know that the guys do. So we're going to just, you know, we're going to talk with them a little bit here about shows that we are looking forward to.
It's not how much you watch, it's what you watch, Lisa.
Mm-hmm, because all that you watch is totally quality.
Yes.
Okay, that's good. But we did kick off a new fall season. And let's be honest, we just saw the VMAs, where Kanye West just went up and basically took over, like, the stage from Taylor Swift.
Oh, very rude. Heart.
Hello. Can the guy just sit down? And then he apologized. You know, Jay Leno started his new show yesterday.
I heard it was all staged.
Oh, was it? Well, yeah. I don't know. Well, Jerry Seinfeld. I only saw the Jerry Seinfeld portion. I didn't watch Kanye, but apparently he was apologetic and got all teary and stuff. And I'm just like, you know what? Maybe don't expend so much effort with the tears and expend more effort in just keeping your mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
That is my recommendation to Kanye, because he can't stop talking about himself and his career, which is going to tank if he doesn't stop talking. Kanye, if you are listening, please take this advice. Go get a mentor, start reading Boundless, and stop talking about Taylor Swift and your own career.
Because we're tired of seeing you as a Twitter trending topic.
Exactly. Yeah, we're so over it. And quite frankly, when you're indoors, you don't need to be wearing sunglasses. I'm just saying, that is so like 1996. I mean, we're over it. But anyway, let's move on and just talk about actual TV shows, like the Serial kind of stuff that's coming out. Mott, please tell us what you're watching.
What is your favorite
Why are you
serial
starting
show?
With me?
Because we know that you have theme Sorry. Parties based on TV shows.
Yeah, so I wrote a blog just a couple of weeks ago about my inverted priority TV. And I'm looking forward to the fall television schedule. One of the shows I'm looking forward to is The Amazing Race. And if you're a Boundless reader, you know that I'm a big fan.
Yay!
It's exciting. I like real people.
There's not a better reality show.
There isn't.
No.
I mean, the catalyst for all the drama is just 11 two-group teams. Is that how you say it? Well, anyway. Traveling around the world, and it's just real people, and they're in stressful situations. It's just a lot of fun.
We need to enter a Boundless team.
You know?
And then, like, we can totally hook people up, like the other contestants, and help them through healthy relationships.
If you can convince Steve to let me off for 1 month, I think that's how long
just
it takes.
A month, yeah.
It's only a month? Oh, my goodness.
I think so. I think they travel around the world in 1 month. I would sign up tomorrow.
Yeah, good times.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only show that Candace and I really got into and felt like this is good TV that we need to carve out some time for, because we had a friend from graduate school who was on the first season and enjoyed watching he and his law buddy win that first year. And so we picked it up a few more seasons after that. But, you know, ever since we moved our big television down to the basement, We're really out of the habit. We get down there to watch an occasional movie. We've been trying to watch the John Adams series ever since it came out last year, 2 years ago.
I think it was 2 years ago.
Dude, we still haven't finished that. But we're kind of at the season of life where it's hard to keep up with anything regular. because we don't know what kind of schedule our kids are going to be on, if they're really going to get down on time to catch it. So we're kind of out of it. I think about the only thing I'm looking forward to this fall is some football, trying to watch Carolina Panthers. But out west here, you know, unless I get creative, I'm not going to see a whole lot of their games. So
channelsurfing.net.
There you go.
Well, I'm excited about The Office because for the past month, Brian and I have been making trips to Blockbuster renting previous seasons of The Office, and it's expensive because they don't rent you the whole season. They rent you a disc from the season. So you get about 5 episodes, which are about 20 minutes each, and we could watch a whole disc in a night. So that's a lot of money going to Blockbuster from us, and we don't have a budget category for that. I don't know what, you know, I feel like a bad steward doing that all the time, but I love The Office.
So will you actually watch The Office, like, when it's on, or do you TiVo and then watch a bunch of them?
Oh, we don't have TV, so we're going to Hulu it on Friday night.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's good. That's a good way of doing it.
You know, it's an okay way of doing it, because the quality, it's not as good, the picture quality, even though we do have a nice little Mac, and, you know, it's a good screen, but Hulu sometimes buffers for a long time. That's annoying. So we'll see.
Okay. Well, speaking of quality, I will tell you that I am watching with my niece right now a series on DVD that is from Korea. I don't know what it is in Korean, but it's called Boys Before Flowers, and it's kind of like a mix between The OC and Pride and Prejudice. And it's about these 4 rich boys at the school, and then this girl comes, and she's a dry cleaner's daughter, and she gets a scholarship, and then there's all these love triangles, and it's just like total drama, and there's a lot of overacting. And my friend who's Korean was like, Korean dramas are worse than like Mexican soap operas. But this one's not too bad. But my niece and I are totally into it, and it's kind of our little bonding time. So that's cool. The other thing that I am watching, and this is because of my coworker, Sarah. Hello, Sarah, because I went on a TV hiatus for 2.5 years and now I'm getting sucked back in, is So You Think You Can Dance. Because we watch it and we're like, you know, maybe we could do that. No, she actually told me last week after someone did like a plank on a table, like literally just planking their full on body up on their forearm. She's like, no, that's not as hard as it looks. Really, I can do that. And I'm like, we're still waiting to see her do this. But it is amazing if you haven't seen it. Like, I mean, they get paired up and it's like these hip hop dancers that all of a sudden have to do ballroom and it's all crazy. But they learn throughout the whole season and it's just amazing.
So I've noticed, Lisa, you sort of tend to watch the talent reality shows. Mm-hmm. So are you looking forward to the new American Idol with Ellen DeGeneres?
You know, I don't know what I think about that because I can totally get into American Idol and I like Ellen. Now, when she guest hosted on So You Think You Can Dance.
Yeah.
And she basically was like, oh, you guys, that just really moved me. You know, I like the judges that tell it like it is. I know you'll find that shocking. But so I'm not, if she's going to be another Paula and just be like, oh, it's so amazing and you inspired me. I'm not going to be into it. But if she's funny, I'll like it. So I'm going to
say. She's not exactly a music expert, right?
No, well, she has no music background. I mean, she says she's going to represent the layperson.
Oh, so that's good. Okay. I don't know.
I don't know.
Now, do you watch your shows, like, do you commiserate with other people, like, when you come into work and talk about them? Because my department talks about shows.
Thank goodness we don't have...
sort of.
Because no one else is watching John Adams, Steve. That's why.
I watched it. Oh, Steve and I talked about that. Yeah. Okay. But Ted and I watch 24, but that doesn't start till January. So that's a winter show. And we like that, so we come in and talk about that. I also like Lost, but I'm not sure anyone else here likes Lost.
No,
I've never watched it.
Yeah.
We have all been found.
Lost. I know that, like you said, 24 is just people get crazy about that, and I don't even understand that concept. So I don't let
you know. We tried
get
to get into it because Candace's parents were just raving about it, and they were talking about how addictive it was. So we went out and rented the first season. And as soon as we realized how addictive it was going to be, we said, we don't want to end up like they were, where they couldn't stop watching it and kept going out back to the video store that night to get the next season.
Yeah.
And watch like 2 seasons.
It is like that, though.
Yeah.
It reminds me, though, what you just said about being addictive, that Beth and I have decided to not take on any new shows. So when all our shows that we currently watch are canceled, we won't watch any more TV.
Whoa.
That's something that we're doing to try to take charge of the television.
You know, we got to the place where we were feeling good about really cutting TV out of our diet and trying to earn more time by not just sitting around watching TV. But we found a lot of that shifting to the internet. We'd go and check our email and surf and find ourselves just as, in some ways, unproductive and grazing. Mm-hmm. And so we've really tried to shift that to reading. And I know you can say reading's an escape too, but I don't know. I guess the way I'm wired, I feel like I'm getting more out of it.
Well, reading is an escape, but it's also beneficial. I'm not sure there's any benefit from TV. Although, you know, TV's okay, and it is, you know, a new form of entertainment. You know, it's okay to like drama and like good performances, but that you can become addicted to it and watch too much.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not able to TiVo it, I mean, just all the commercials you have to absorb that just kind of keep you in a materialistic mindset. I mean, just, I don't know, I feel like we had cable for short periods of time. We would do what we call the first trimester special. Sometimes when Candace was pregnant and morning sickness, and we wanted the kids to have something like Disney to watch. And, you know, you find yourself flipping around, even with the channels that don't have commercials, there's always a commercial bent to it, especially anything like your HGTV mm-hmm. or something like that, mm-hmm. where you feel like it's creating that sense of, I'm not good enough. I don't have enough stuff, you know, and I don't know. I like not being reminded that I don't have enough stuff.
Well, I think if you are a TV watcher, TiVo or some sort of digital recording device is essential to watch TV intentionally. You can watch what you want, when you want. You don't have to, you know, if you really like a TV show too much, well, you know, it's probably a sign that you like TV too much and shouldn't watch, but you can prioritize events that are more worthwhile so that you can put off a show till Friday night when you have more time to relax, maybe. But I think that's revolutionized. Is that a word?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Revolutionized mm-hmm. our TV watching. It's become much more intentional. We've limited our shows.
Mm-hmm. I think it can be more intentional if you do that and like just have one night a week where you watch TV and you kind of put your little shows together and watch mm-hmm. it, because otherwise I think there's that TV drift where you just sit down in front of the TV and then all of a sudden you're surfing and you're catching portions of new shows, and then all of a sudden like 3 hours of your evening are just sucked out mm-hmm. of your life.
It's true.
So it can be kind of sketchy.
Yeah,
I think go ahead.
That's why we do the computer thing, because it makes us be intentional about it. Because both of us would just sit down in front of the TV. I would sit down and watch Food Network all day. I would never get anything done.
Yeah.
And Brian is so easily distracted by anything visual going on that if the TV were on in a room, he would never listen to anything I say. And he was the one who made the call, we can't have a TV, because it would hurt our marriage. And we would just become stupid.
Well, and you know how a lot of people just got to have something on. Got to have a radio or a TV or something on as background. But, you know, we got to the place where, you know, we found it better just have some music on in the background than to feel like it's a TV or something that's, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I have a stack. Like, I have a stack of books that I'm working through right now. I love to read and everything, but there is not yet the book version of America's Next Top Model. So that is another show. That's one that I'm going to have to cut myself off on, because it started the short model season last week.
Short models.
They're short models, like 5'7" and under.
Wow.
And they're all, you know, you get caught up in all their craziness. And the photo shoots are amazing, and that's what sucks me in. And I was with my coworker who loves watching it too. But there was a Christian last week. So y'all need to write to us, editor@boundless.org, if you saw this, because seriously, I'm going to praise God right now. Praise the Lord. She got voted off because she was crazy and was just not an asset to the kingdom. Let me tell you, I don't support crazy Christians on TV.
Yeah.
You need to get a PR person if you're going to be on there and just choose what you can say and what you can't. Like Kanye. I'm getting back to him. I'm not saying
there were some bad witnesses on The Amazing Race a few years ago as a mm-hmm. Christian family, and they were the most hateful, vindictive people. You know who I'm talking about. Dave's in the engineer. Dave, our engineer, is nodding his head. They were awful.
Hmm. Well, then this year they have the gay Christian brothers.
Yes.
I'm not sure exactly what their kingdom contribution is.
Well, you know, it's funny. Jerry Bruckheimer, he knows how to set up good TV. So he usually has one Christian group and one homosexual group,
mm-hmm.
and they don't sort of battle out. You can tell they don't like each other. But so he's the past 2 years he's decided to combine them, so they're gay Christians. create a whole new controversy there.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, doing that, that's my job here at Focus, so I don't need to get that via TV. But anyway, well, this is fascinating. You out there, all you folks, if you're not TiVoing something right now, write to us, editor@boundless.org, and tell us about your fall TV picks. You can weigh in on this as well. Also, if you can please, if someone can please back me up on the Kanye thing and the crazy Christians on TV, I would appreciate it. I need some backup, y'all. And someone, if you know Kanye West, please write to him and tell him we need him to just stop talking on TV. If he wants to write his music, that is fine, but we need him to ditch the sunglasses and just keep his mouth shut. So that is it. All right, thanks.
14 days with a heart like a stone, 40 nights feeling cold and alone like a stranger. 'Cause it's been so long, it's not you, but it's me who's gone. Try to pray, bow my head, but life gets in the way. And I don't even know what to say. What I'd give for a change, how long?
We are here in Studio A for another culture segment, and I'm pretty excited about our guest today because, as many of you know, a few weeks ago I had the chance to interview, we aired an interview with one of my favorite people, a legend, Mr. Bill Gaither. Gaither Homecomings, hardcore fan. Yeah, so, but I have someone today who is, quite frankly, almost, I mean, honestly, can anyone approach Bill? Probably not, but almost as cool. And that is former, but really the president of the United States, George W. Bush. Mr. President, it's so great to have you here today.
Thank you, Lisa. It's an honor to be here.
You know, it's neat that you finally decided to step back into Focus on the Family again. I mean, I know you've been out and about quite a bit. So how's your trip back to Colorado been and your time here so far?
Well, it's a little weird flying commercial.
Yeah. I would imagine. That's unfortunate. You would think that those perks would kind of carry over. That's a
No, I do that on purpose.
Oh.
You know, I've always loved keeping my finger on the pulse of the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
It's the same. You know, some things don't change. And I've always been an of the people kind of person. You know, some people are reclusive. I'm more, I'm not sure what the word is, but that's, you know, I like to be with the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that is good. And you actually...
Inclusive. Yeah, there
you go.
I knew okay. I'd come up with it, but I thought about it long enough.
Okay. Are there any names of African leaders or Middle East leaders that you would like to throw out? I know that, you know, you often like practicing those as well. So, I mean, it's just, you know how to say Dobson?
Nelson Mandisa.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There you go. So,
yeah. Dr. Dobson, of course I can say that.
Yeah. As long as you're
He's
familiar.
He's my buddy. Yeah.
That's.
We play foosball.
Your hombre. Your
right.
hombre, because, yeah, you play foosball. That's good. So you... We're especially excited that you're here at the Boundless Show because we find that a lot of people, especially, you know, people who are influential, find that this is their first stop when they come to Focus is the Boundless Show because they're like, you know what? I need to cut out the clutter. I need to not deal with the riffraff. I need to go straight to the Boundless Show because this is the audience that I want to speak to. And obviously that's the case for you today.
No doubt about it. This is the generation that's... going to determine the future of this country. And you guys, you know, on your Xboxes, hey, get with it. This is your world. It's your time to quote a movie.
Yeah. All right. For those of you who haven't fallen off your chairs yet, I will let you know that even though I'm sure W wants to come to the Boundless show, he sent his stand-in, the next best person, and that is John Morgan. John is here. I actually met you at NRB last year. He is known as really the foremost George W. Bush impersonator out there right now. Originally from Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just all kinds of stuff going on in Orlando. I mean, obviously, that's a great place to be from because, you know, you just got Disney and all of that stuff going on. So
new coaster opened yesterday.
Did it really?
Yeah.
That's good to know.
You hook up your iPod to it or something. It's got some kind of cool thing
word.
where you can choose your own music that plays, and then the video follows you along the track, and then you can get the video at the end.
Oh, my word. Okay.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
That is pretty crazy. Well, John, you have been all over the place. You've been on, I know you've been on The View, you've been on all the different networks, you've been on many different radio programs, you've been used at corporate events now for all, I mean, it's really kind of, you got to tell us a little bit of the story of how this came about, because obviously, you know, I think you said you were selling appliances or out in a,
right.
just living life, being a normal businessman, just out there and living life. And, was it someone like came up, basically, did you know the connection you had in looks to the president, or kind of what's the story behind that there?
Well, my 20-eens, as a newly married guy, I had a music ministry, and I had this dream of traveling around sharing the gospel in music, recorded a couple of albums, but I had no character. And after a couple of years, I had to lay that ministry down, and it was really painful for me to do because that dream was burning in my heart. And I remember God telling me at the time, speaking to my heart, don't worry, I used Moses after 40 years on the backside of the desert. Well, you know, in your 20s, you don't really want to hear that. So I stuffed it away and pretty much forgot about it. And here, 25 years later, I'm helping to set up for then Governor George Bush running for president rally in Orlando, and one of his full-time staffers was the very first one to come up to me and notice that I looked a lot like W. But it was 3 years after that that at my mom's 80th birthday party, someone, a friend of the family named Paula, came up to me and said, John, you should become a George Bush lookalike. And I thought, what is that, you know? And she said, she knew of people who were like Lucy and Ricky lookalikes or Elvis lookalikes and Cher and all these different folks. And in my mind, all I could think of was, you know, well, I have friends. I mean, I have a reputation. I'm not going to stick it out there and do something so bizarre like that. And I just dismissed it flat. I said, no way, absolutely not. About 3 months later, my precious wife, Kathy, was watching a late night talk show and saw someone impersonating the president, and the idea came to her, do a web search. So she looked up George Bush impersonator and found a couple of guys on there making a full-time living. Mm-hmm. And when she saw how much they were getting for an appearance, she came into my bedroom, woke me up out of a dead sleep, and drug me over to the computer and said, I just found your new career. You're going to become a George Bush impersonator. And then when I saw the websites, that's when the faith hit me that maybe there was something to it. But still, the idea of putting my reputation on the line, of getting up in front of an audience doing comedy, I'd never done comedy before. I'd done music. I did love being in front of an audience. But, you know, I just had never done anything like that. And so I was very quick to just dismiss it. But then the thought hit me, well, what if it's God? What if God actually created you specifically for this time in your life? And I couldn't dismiss that. I couldn't just ignore that thought. So I spent some time fasting and praying about it, and indeed came to find out that it truly was God's will for me to get involved in this. And then it became a question of, okay, now you know it's God. Are you going to just sit on it? Or are you going to obey? Or are you going to flat out disobey? And that's the question that we ask ourselves every day as we're dealing with life, as we're dealing with the dreams that are in our heart, as we're dealing with the things that we know God's telling us to do in this moment, or the things that we know He doesn't want us to do that we're tempted to do in this moment. Are we going to sit on it? Are we going to obey? Or are we going to disobey? You know, I love the passage in John chapter 14, verse 15, where Jesus said, if you love me, you'll do what I command. And boy, that is a criteria for obedience. I just love that, you know, because when you're sitting there debating, like in the morning when you know you're supposed to get up and do your devotions, but you're so tired, you oh, it's 20 more minutes, you know, do you love me? You know, do you love me enough to get your sorry keister out of the bed and get on your knees, you know? And so it's neat. This little nugget of truth came to me a few years ago, and I wrote it in my book, and I've shared it with hundreds of people. If you find yourself arguing with God, guess who's wrong?
Mm-hmm. So what have been some of your most interesting acquaintances or kind of experiences out there on the road as you've had the chance to meet people in character?
Well, I'll share an encounter with you that I think will serve you. I was touring with Sean Hannity and the Freedom Concert with a Hillary Clinton lookalike, a wonderful lady named Teresa Barnwell out of California. I think she just moved to Texas. And just a tremendous performer. And we were in Atlanta. And I had just the day before that had a harrowing experience where I almost didn't make it to Atlanta and wound up having to be flown on a private airplane. But I got there. And then just before the appearance, and we had a lot riding on it because if we did well in this performance, we were going to get to complete the entire tour. Just before the show, I forgot my entire script. It just dropped right out of my head. Bless her heart, Teresa, she's handing me the script here, you know, and I looked at it, it looked like it was written in Russian. I mean, I don't think I could have told you my name in that moment. You know, my thought was, what am I going to do? And then I realized, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pray, and then I'm going to go out on that stage, and I'm going to trust God. And even though I couldn't remember my birthday in that moment, I'm exaggerating a bit, but I mean, it was a serious case of stage fright, of mind lock. I've had enough experience with the faithfulness of God that I was willing, with joy, even it was weird. I had fear and faith all at the same time and decided I am going to go up on that stage and I know that God is not going to let me down. And I wasn't afraid because I knew that God would be faithful. I knew that I did not remember my lines and that if God didn't help me, it would be a huge, horrible embarrassment in front of 10,000 people in a great big arena in Atlanta. And, you know, the whole thing would be awful. But the minute my foot hit the first step, it all came back to me. And the performance was wonderful. We wound up completing the tour. It was just a tremendous, tremendous opportunity. Sean Hannity, Oliver North, the whole team, everybody was very, very gracious. But here's the kicker. God is faithful. And anything he's called you to do, he will equip you to do. He knows my weaknesses and he knows yours. And he's got a plan for you that is so far beyond your wildest dreams. You know, he's just saying, hey, am I God? Trust me. Throw it out. You know, take a risk for God and watch me be me on your behalf.
Do you think, and this is interesting for our audience, just because we are a lot of young adults out there who are kind of struggling with career and all the decisions that we have to make now moving into adulthood and beyond as we establish families and stuff. Do you think there is that stereotype there for folks? Like, I mean, did you get any backlash from people like your own parents or whomever that are just like, is this for real? Like, I mean, is this really, can God really use you doing this stuff? Or this is just nonsense? Or this is just, because I think we have a lot of folks who, you know, maybe they just feel like they're in food service or they're doing something or they're doing, you know, something that they just didn't expect they were going to do, or they took a turn in their career or they didn't get the degree that they wanted to get. And now they're just kind of like, wow, how can God really use me doing this when I thought I should have just been an accountant? You know?
Yes, it reminds me of a shepherd boy who slew a giant. Uh-huh. And, you know, it's funny, I heard, I can't remember the author's name, but he said, as long as David kept his eyes on the giant, he stumbled. Mm-hmm. But when he kept his eyes on the much, much greater God, the giants tumbled. Mm-hmm. And that was true throughout David's career. Mm-hmm. If you look at what's going on in the circumstances of his life, you know, during the times when he's writing, "Oh Lord, how great is your name," and during the seasons when his faith is the greatest, that's when he had his greatest victories. You know, and it's really all about trusting in the Lord and then taking actions based on that trust. And you know, absolutely. I had times when I was younger when nobody believed in me, and I wanted to launch out and do some things, and true, my lack of character actually was a stumbling block in my life. But there are people saved, though, you know, in with all of that mixture of good and bad and evil and sin and pride and arrogance and passion for Christ and willingness to get out there and share the gospel. There are people whose lives will be eternally grateful for the fact that I stepped out in faith. And, you know, you can't be somebody you're not. You're mixed. You're full of sin and pride. And so am I. Guess what? That's humanity. And God, he gets so thrilled. What is it? His strength is made perfect in our weaknesses. Mm-hmm. Even the Apostle Paul was given the, you know, the thorn in the flesh so that people wouldn't say, well, it's all Paul. He could point right back and say, no, it's not me. Surely it's not me. You know, I know me, and I know who I was even as a young Christian trying to be obedient. I was very much a big mess as a young believer, but yet at the same time, God used me. And as I've continued to grow and be obedient and say no to a lot of the sin and say yes to a lot of crucifying the flesh and growing in Christ and growing up and becoming more mature, the opportunities to be used just become greater and more profound.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. What an adventure.
Yeah. Well, and as you said, John, you, you know, what began as a career opportunity, you know, your wife just saying, hey, get busy here, use what you got, has become quite a ministry and quite a calling. And you have a new book out that is called My Life as a Bush and My Heart for Imitating Jesus. And it's really your story of what it looks like to, you know, live a life and a faith calling that ultimately will reflect the, what would you say, like the ultimate, the ultimate person that we should be imitating, the ultimate, you know, and obviously, and do it for free. We should, we should be doing it. So tell us a little bit about how then this kind of book came about in the midst of all of this.
Okay. I've wanted to write a book sharing my testimony forever. Through procrastination and everything else, it just kind of sat on the shelf. And again, not knowing what to do or where to start or where to go. And then I got an invitation to speak at Promise Keepers in 2008. And of course, the first thing I thought was, well, I got to have a book. You know, mm-hmm. got to have a book. So I had about 8 weeks to complete the manuscript. And so I got started writing, and it was fun. My manager Vince Wilcox and I wrote the book over Skype. Him in Nashville, me in Orlando, and I would write a chapter and send it up to him. He'd review it, send it back to me, and then we'd get on Skype and walk through it line by line. And we did it just, you know, like night and day, and got the thing written really, really quickly. And then, as it turned out, I had a golf date with the owner of a Strang Communications, mm-hmm. Steve Strang, and we went and played golf. And I told him what was going on, and he right then and there said, "Well, I'll help you publish it," which just blew my mind. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I have friends that hate my guts now because of that. You know, like what? You know, and so I mean, in like 10 weeks, the book went from start to finish, and I had the first copy in my hand in time for the very first Promise Keepers meeting in 2008, and had the honor of providing it for folks. There and since, and what a thrill to write this book about the imitation of Jesus Christ. You know, Thomas Aquinas wrote the book The Imitation of Christ many years ago, and this is kind of a different idea because I'm a George Bush impersonator. I impersonate the mannerisms and the face and the voice of another man, albeit the most powerful man in the world for the last 8 years in the White House. But we're all called to be imitators, what a great analogy, of the, for sure, greatest man that ever walked the face of the earth. our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And it's so cool that we don't know what his face looked like, because what we imitate is his character. Mm-hmm. We imitate the gifts and the joy and the love and the faith that he demonstrated when he walked on the earth. You know, and we read the same way I learned how to imitate President Bush, by, you know, reading about his life, getting to know who he was, watching videos, listening to his voice. In the same way, we listen to the voice of Christ by reading the parables, by reading the stories, by feeling his heart, his love, his passion for his people, and then mimicking that. You know, but the difference, when I impersonate President Bush, he's nowhere around. It's just an act from a performer. But when we imitate Christ, we're doing so empowered by the indwelling Holy Spirit. Jesus living in us, I get goosebumps just thinking about it, living through us and loving the world through our eyes, through our words, through our hands, through our acts of service. It's the body of Christ happening, you know, in real time.
Yeah. And that's amazing, because it actually reminds me of a series that we have here at Focus that many people are familiar with host Ray Vanderlaan. And he did a couple series called In the Dust of the Rabbi and Walk as Jesus Walked. And he talked about really what is the power of discipleship, and how back then when you followed a rabbi, you lived with him, you walked with him, you slept in the same spot, you sat under his teaching for a long period of time. And what does it really look like to allow Jesus Christ to so take over your own life that really you are now, you are allowing him to speak through you and live through you and minister through you as his hands and feet. And how obviously the disciples had the chance to do that firsthand. But as we, as believers, have the opportunity to do that, we need to be living and breathing, you know, the life of Christ and who he is and who he wants to be through us. I just wanted to ask you, John, just getting back to now in applying that. So for example, young guys, like say, you know, especially speaking to young guys here, you know, there's often that understanding or maybe that impression that, you know, they don't want someone getting up in their business, or they don't want, there's kind of that push-pull of what does it look like to live a real authentic life with other, with mentors in your life, with a brotherhood of Christian believers, older guys who can help that next generation along. What would be your words to these guys kind of listening, you know, who maybe need that in their life so that they're not sitting alone there, they're not staying out of fellowship, they're not, you know, maybe their parents haven't given them a great example, or they don't have a good circle of friends around them. What do they need to do?
The five worst years of my life were my first 5 years as a Christian. Because I believed that I was the worst person in the church. I believed that if anybody knew the real me, they would kick me out of the church, and then where would my hope be? I knew that the only hope I had was in Christ. And if someone shut the door on Jesus Christ to me, if somebody had the authority to do that and did it, and in my mind I thought that I was at risk of that because of my hidden sin, then I would be doomed for hell. So I, you know, I had all these misconceptions. I had all these half-truths. The accuser was constantly berating me, and I didn't know that he was lying to me until I began to be mentored, until I began to listen to the words of my pastor and believe what he was saying rather than the lies that I, you know, I would filter every teaching through the untruths of my own paradigm. And when I began to confess, when I began to come into a relationship with someone that I could trust in the church, my youth pastor, and, you know, we began to discern the difference between the truth and a lie. And slowly, and believe me, it was a long, painstaking process. Those lies were overturned. They were exposed. They were removed. The light came in. I received forgiveness. One of the greatest things I learned was that you can't make promises to God as though you had the strength to obey. One of the most powerful things I ever learned was it's about surrender, not about promises. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say to God, oh God, I'll never do it again. You know, and then of course, you know, because you say that in a moment after you're tempted and you're not being tempted at that moment, you know,
right.
So you make all these new promises, but then when the temptation comes, there's no power, you know, but when you surrender, see, God's not looking for your strength. He's looking to be your strength. And, you know, that's a revelation to some of you listening to me right now. He's not looking for your strength. He's looking to be your strength. So instead of making promises you can't keep, and you already know that from experience, you surrender your inability and cry out to Him to be your champion. And the best way to do that is with a brother, with a pastor, maybe an older friend, somebody that you are willing to take the risk of exposure to and trust with your addiction, with your pornography, with whatever it is that's going on in your life. Humble yourself and then say, you know, will you be my accountability partner? Will you be somebody who, you know, will ask me, how's it going? And then, you know what? Turn right around and pick somebody up and counsel them. You know, be mentored and be mentoring at the same time. And what a great army, arm in arm, this next generation is going to be. But we cannot do it as lone rangers. You know, the disciples formed the church. We are the body of Christ for a reason. We totally need each other. Absolutely, essentially need one another to speak into our lives and be Christ on our behalf. And then you can turn around and do that for somebody else.
Hmm. Yeah, there's an older guy in our church who has taught Sunday school and in my class several times, and he says. He says that exposing sin renders it powerless, because the power of sin is in its concealment. And that's when it can eat away at us. And when we get into this vicious cycle of, like you said, you know, the guilt and the shame, and I need to do this. And if I just write down 10 resolutions of how I'm going to overcome this without ever turning it over to Christ or to fellow believers who can help you in confession. And so I think that's huge. So what's next for you? Kind of what do you have coming down the pike here as you're out and about?
Well, I have a fun surprise for everybody. A dear friend of mine, Dale Lee, is a Bill Clinton impersonator. And we met at the airport. The story is in the book. And it's just a crazy, wacky friendship that he and I share. We are mentor-mentee to one another. We share one another's faults and pray for each other. Almost every time we talk, there's a prayer involved in it. And we have built a show called Bill and George's Excellent Adventure. And it's a wacky, bold, raucous, comedic show, but and it works in a corporate audience, but for the church, we step out of character in a portion of the show and both share our struggles, past, present, and current and future, well, past and current struggles, being vulnerable. Dale comes from a very, very abusive background and has a tremendous heart for abuse victims. And so we we pull the mask off and speak to a congregation about the importance of forgiveness, the importance of not judging those who have fallen, as, you know, the former president has, and the importance of praying for those that we might not even like. You know, and that's kind of a current event in our political scenario. We need to be praying for our president. It might not be something you want to do, but it's something that we're commanded to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I found that I've got a lot more compassion for people that I may not agree with politically or socially, but still, there are people that need salvation or, you know, at the very least, need more of God in their lives. And so it's really cool. It's a cool show. It's funny. It's got music and comedy and yet a great deal of poignancy, too. And we're hoping to take it to college campuses and
oh,
churches.
Oh, that's neat. And folks can find out about that at your website?
Shortly.
Shortly.
Yeah, there's a little bit about there on there. And you can also go to, you can Google Dale Lee, Bill Clinton impersonator as well.
Okay, so make sure that you get the full scoop at GeorgeBushImpersonator.com.
Right.
The book is My Life as a Bush and My Heart for Imitating Jesus. The guy is John Morgan. He's been with us today. Thank you so much for joining us here on The Boundless Show and sharing some of your story.
The honor has been mine.
Little girl 14 flipping through a magazine says she wants to look that way. But her hair isn't straight, her body isn't fake, and she's always felt overweight. Well, little girl 14, I wish that you could see the beauty is within your heart. And you were made with such care, your skin, your body, and your hair are perfect just the way they are. There can never be a more beautiful you. Divine the lies, disguises, and hoops that make you just.
he's got another plan. Only wants what you'll do instead. A little girl, 21, you never thought this would come. You starve yourself to play the part. But I can promise you there's a man whose love is true. He'll treat you like the jewel you are. There can never be a more beautiful you. Defy the lies, disguises, and hoops that make you jump through. You were made to fill a purpose that only you could do. So there can never be a more beautiful you. More beautiful you.
All right, we're opening up this week's inbox, and I have Candace with me by phone. Candace, hello.
Hey, Lisa. It's great to be with you.
Hey. All right. Well, this is from a female, and it's about relationships. So you're going to be...
This will be something fresh.
Yeah. So you're going to be ready for this one. But this is good, because this angle we haven't addressed in the past. So I think this is going to be interesting.
Okay.
She says, I'm currently a missionary overseas. First of all, props for that, missionary.
Woo-hoo.
Okay. She says, I'm a missionary overseas. However, I will be permanently returning to the U.S. in 1 year. My best friend back home works with a guy who she thinks would be a perfect fit for me. He decided to email me, and we've been emailing back and forth quite regularly. He's a great Christian guy, we have a lot in common, and we're both enjoying getting to know each other. My question is, do you think it's worth pursuing an email relationship while I'm overseas? And should I just continue to email him back until he starts to initiate more? I guess I don't know how an email relationship is likely to unfold into something more.
Okay, so yes, the answer is yes.
Okay. All right, thanks,
relationship.
Candace.
This is a great opportunity. The fact that you have a mutual friend that thinks you're a good fit, ask the friend, have you said to the guy, I think you're a good fit? You know, make sure that your expectations are based on reality and not just fantasy. So I think for starters, email your friend and say, so what have you told this young man, and do you have any idea what his intentions are? Hopefully you can get some information that way, but email, and when he emails you, respond back. You know, I don't think it's necessary to wait 6 weeks in between. I think if he writes and you're by the computer, you can write him back right away. And if that speed frightens him, then, you know, that's a problem for him, not for you. I also think letter writing is a great way to get to know each other in this, when distance is inevitable. You know, it's unavoidable right now. And so you have this opportunity to get to know him in an interesting way, in a way that's not quite as common today, but used to be very common. So it's a way to deepen the relationship by letters, and that's actually a physical, you know, tangible token of who he is. You can see his handwriting. You can see the paper he chooses. You can see if it's got ketchup stains on it, whatever. but I will say a couple of cautions. Again, it has to do with expectations. And so I think it's going to be important as you go through this next year really to share those with each other and not have this in mind that when you get off the boat from China or wherever it is you're returning from, that he's going to be standing there with a ring in his hand. You know, you don't want to be devastated that you've spent a year thinking this guy is Mr. It, and yeah, maybe he's just seeing you as an exotic pen pal.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I would say, Candace, I mean, I know where you're coming from, and I have heard stories from people like in my parents' generation where this happened, and
mm-hmm.
or where, you know, where they wrote letters and then they got married.
Right.
But I have not seen, I think we have to issue some caution. I'm not going to disagree with you totally, but I just literally, well, maybe except for one or two cases, have not seen this work among my friends, because inevitably what happens is it gets to be this weird emotionally tied
mm-hmm.
relationship online.
Yeah.
Where my friends have talked to these guys for like maybe 3, 4, 5 months online and maybe on the phone, whatever, and then they meet, and then it just fizzles out, like, you
right,
know, because then
right,
it's the, you know, because usually for the guys, I mean, in the experiences that we've had, it's kind of like that whole elusive chemistry, and then they meet, and then it's like, you know, oh, I'm really not
yeah,
that
I'm
into
not
her
ready.
While in the meantime the girl is like practically has married herself off to him,
right? Well,
and so yeah, it's establishing those boundaries.
I agree with those cautions. I had a friend who had something like this happen. She met a friend of a friend, and they started corresponding by email, and they had this amazing online relationship, and when finally they got to be together, it was like saying hello and introducing themselves for the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
None of that counted because they were strangers.
I've seen almost the opposite thing happen where they've shared too much and then all of a sudden they meet and there's like this weird false relationship because they really do know one another. I mean, I had a friend who basically acknowledged with the guy after like 2 weeks that they were going to get married. Like they said they loved one another and all this kind of stuff. And this was online. And, you know, then you meet. And then if, you know, whatever, if it doesn't work out, then you go into the awkward fade, which just completely drives me nuts. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, and then it's just an unhealthy way of ending it and all that kind of stuff.
Well, email is no substitution for in-person. And so unless she really is in the middle of nowhere, I think if they're going to have this ongoing relationship for a year, she should invite him to come visit.
Yeah.
And that will certainly be a test of how serious he is.
Yeah.
And then, too, I think, another caution is, it's one thing to have a man who is willing to wait for a woman. It's another thing for a woman agreeing to wait a year for a man. And that's something I would never recommend, because I think for a woman to take herself out of the realm of availability for a man who has not given her a commitment, mm-hmm. is a real danger that she's going to end up with nothing and a broken heart.
Right. Yeah. Well, and we don't know, too. I mean, most of the situations that I've known, the girls have, you know, you were saying if he emails you, then go ahead and respond. And I think that's good. Provided it doesn't become, you know, a 2-hour email fest every night, or it's just, you know, constant communication. I mean, I think staying.
Well, you're right. And I'm amazed at how many times I assume people are asking really early on, so what does this mean? And the reality is they're not asking that. And they're just assuming they know what it means. And inevitably, they're disappointed. So don't wait to say, hey, I'm enjoying these conversations. What are your intentions? Mm-hmm. It's such a simple question.
Yeah.
It's four words. What are your intentions? Just ask that question. And he may freak out and run away, but you know what? Far better to have that happen in the first month than in the, you know, the second year.
Yeah. And if neither party is willing to acknowledge that, then it has to remain a very high level, just touch base kind of email thing, where it can be, you know, hey, you know, how's the work over there overseas going, and, you know, whatever, but not getting into really super personal
but
stuff.
Even that, when it's a man and a woman, why bother? Why waste your time with that? What's the point?
Yeah.
What's the point of that friendship if it doesn't have the potential to become something more?
Right. Well, I think the reader was saying, or the listener was saying, you know, they're maybe just testing the waters. They're seeing, getting acquainted over email.
Right,
so
right.
Remember the difference between an acquaintanceship and an actual proactive pursuit. I mean,
yeah.
They're different.
Fair
so
enough.
You can't get too wrapped up in it emotionally, as women will do. Hello.
Yeah, it's our tendency.
Oh, my word. So, okay. Well, thanks, Candace.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
We'll weigh in on that.
Privilege, and keep those awesome questions coming.
We'll do it, and hopefully we'll see you again over here in person sometime.
Yes, that's my hope.
Sounds good. Well, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Okay, that is it. As always, write to us at editor@boundless.org so you can submit your questions and your comments to us. We have received some very encouraging comments recently. I just read one this morning. I was totally blessed by it, so please continue to write to us. Who was it? Nayla in New York City. Am I pronouncing that name right? Nayla? Who emailed us. I'm just calling her out right here. Sure. If that is not how you pronounce your name, Nayla, please email us, editor@boundless.org. But you just blessed me with your comments this morning, so thank you. That is it for this week's show. Please make sure that you stay tuned next week as we delve into more topics. We're going to be interviewing a few more people coming up in the next few weeks that you will not want to miss. So make sure that you check out the show. Make sure that you pass the show on to your friends. I also heard recently that we are just climbing in the blogosphere. People are reading the blog. Hello, that is awesome. So please continue recommending that to your friend. We'll maybe have some stats out for you on that so you can be part of something big. Anyway, that is it for this week's show. As always, we love to have you here. For The Boundless Show, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. We will see you next week.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.